Okay, Parshas Lech Lecha. All right, you can flip to page 66. We'll learn a couple of psukim together this fine afternoon. Stories and Bereishis are just great. It's wonderful learning. We should really just spend almost all year. We can just do little by little. So I just, you know, it's hard. Every week we just get to pick out one little section, one little bit. So what I want to do this morning is learn one little interaction between Hashem and Avraham. It's a classic interaction in which the promise of children is in essence given to Avraham. Ramifications for us, the Jewish people, certainly. It's about four or five psukim. We'll study them inside. We'll just go piece by piece, working through the different commentators and see what we have to learn from them. It actually begins, the last word is on the bottom of page 64. The background to where we are is following the war with the four kings and the five kings, where the four kings attack the five kings and they defeat them. Lot is taken captive. Avram goes out with his army, so to speak, of Eliezer, his trusted servant. There are two opinions in the sages whether or not he actually went with an army or whether or not he went with just his servant Eliezer. They go out, they attack the kings, they recapture Lot, bring him back to safety. Avram declines the offers of wealth and riches from the freed, emancipated kings. And Hashem, he basically says, I don't need any of your money. Hashem has promised to make me rich, and I'm going to fulfill that promise. Let Hashem make me rich. I don't need anything from you. That's all the background as to where the psukim that we will be studying come in from, following this incident of the war with the four kings and the five kings. And we know that we're following on the heels of that because the first verse in Pasuk Aleph, verse 1 in the 15th chapter, starts, Achar ha-dvarim ha-eler. It was after these events. And Rashi points out, whenever the word achar is used as opposed to acharei, achar means immediately following. Right after the previous events which were recorded, the following events took place. So it's immediately following the victory of Avraham over the kings. Hayo advar Hashem el Avram b'machazel leimor. The word of Hashem came to Avram in a vision saying, the Ramban Nachmanides points out, by the way, that this machazeh, this vision, which is not usually the way that it was described until this point. Avram's communications with Hashem had not been described in such a way. The Ramban points out this was Avram's first vision which he received during the day. Usually his visions would be during the nighttime sleep. That's how a prophet would receive his prophecy. This was his first daytime prophecy, which is a higher level. Any case, what's the prophecy? What does Hashem now say to Avram immediately following this battle with the kings? Al tira Avram. Do not be afraid. Who do you say don't be afraid to?
Children.
And what kind of person? And what state is the person in that you say to them, don't be afraid?
Fearful.
Somebody who's got a fear, right? You don't tell. I don't have to tell you. Don't be afraid right now. Right, what's the fear? I mean, if you're afraid that I'm going to ask you a question, I'm going to ask you to answer it, and it's going to be on tape, and everyone's going to hear your response, then I would say, don't worry, I'm going to turn the tape off before I ask you the question. But if you're not afraid of it, I don't have to say to you, don't worry, chill out, be calm about this. So the first words out of Hashem's mouth to Avram, when he says, Al tira Avram. Don't be afraid. So we know that somewhere lurking in the background, something is irking, something is bothering Avram. So what does Hashem say to him? Al tira Avram, do not be afraid. Anochi mogein loch, I will protect you. Scharcha harbe me'od, your reward will be very great. Scharcha harbe me'od, a great amount of reward. So he says, don't be afraid. And then he tells him two things. I will protect you, and your reward will be great. So apparently, whatever Avraham's fear was that elicited the response of Hashem of, don't be afraid, the response to that is twofold. Number one, I will protect you. And number two, your reward is in fact great. So Rashi and the Ramban disagree exactly what was bothering Avraham that brought out these two responses of number one, I'll protect you, and number two, your reward is going to be great. So if you look in Rashi, you'll read it inside and translate if you want to just listen outside. Rashi says, it's three lines into the Rashi print. Or it's actually two lines in, right in the very beginning there. Second line of Rashi. Says Rashi, Achar advarim ha'ela, after these things, meaning, Achar shenase lo neis zeh shehoreges ha'malochen, right after this miracle took place, and Avram killed down all of these kings, these powerful block of kings, ha'yadoyek, he was afraid, va'oimer, shema kibalti schar al kol tzidkoisi. What was Avraham's fear? I've already received my reward for all of my righteousness. Because there's this idea which we find, a concept that a person can build up a reservoir of schar, generally handed out in the world to come, but there are times in which we call upon that, so to speak. We draft out of our bank account some of that schar for things which are taking place in this world to which we need a certain merit. So Avram just went through a miraculous experience. He just single-handedly basically defeated the most powerful block of kings at that time. What was his fear, says Rashi? His fear was that that's it. He's done. He just received all of his reward based on that. That's how Rashi learns what the fear was. What's the response? Al tira anochi mogemoch. I will protect you. Rashi says two things. What, first of all, is Avram need to be protected from, says Rashi? Min ha'onesh. He'll be protected from punishment. Why would Avram be punished? Says Rashi. Shelo te'anesh al kol osan nefashos sheharagta. He was afraid he was going to be punished for all the people whom he killed. Because when you go to war, you do a lot of killing. That's what takes place in war. War is a horrible event, horrific incident. So Rashi learns, interestingly, that the fear of Avram was number one. He received all of his reward already. And what is the response of Hashem? Twofold. Number one, I'll protect you. What is Hashem protecting Avram from? Punishment for having killed a human being. And second, says Rashi, what was the second thing Hashem says? Your reward will be great. On that is responding to Avram's fear. His fear was that I've used up all my reward. So Hashem says, A, first of all, you should just know when you went to... No, everything from in Rashi's perspective was about this war. I just went to war. I've killed people. I've used up all my reward in so doing. Says Hashem to Avram, don't worry. Number one, the fact that you have killed people, I will protect you from any type of punishment. You don't need to worry about that. And number two, your fear that your schar has been used up, your reservoir of righteousness has been depleted. Scharcha harbe ma'od. I will give you plenty of reward. I will give you lots what you can have. You don't have to worry. That is how Rashi learns. That's how Rashi learns this transaction. This interaction, I should say, between Hashem and between Avram. So Avram's fear was punishment for killing people, fear of using up his reward. Hashem says two things to him: I will protect you from punishment, and I will give you great amounts of reward. That's how Rashi learns. Ramban, Nachmanides has a little different approach. Ramban writes, you know what Avram was afraid of? Hashem says to Avram, don't worry. So according to the Ramban, what Avram was afraid of was a physical retribution from the kings. He was afraid they were actually going to regroup, gather up armies, and attack him. Similar to Yaakov had a fear after his sons, Shimon and Levi, went and attacked the city of Shechem. He's afraid that they're gonna come after us. So to that, says the Ramban, he said, Ani anochi mogemoch, I will protect you. I will protect you. Now, the phrase Mogein Lecha should be very familiar, the phrase Mogein Avraham. And it's the first blessing of the Shemoneh Esrei is Mogein Avraham, which is borrowed from here, in which Hashem, Avraham had a fear. Again, according to Rashi, the fear was, I've depleted my reward, or I'm going to be punished for killing people. According to the Ramban, the fear was, they're physically going to come after me. And Hashem's response is, Anochi Mogein, I will protect you. And we invoke that phrase in our prayers, and we say, Blessed are you, Mogein Avraham, the shield, the protection of Avraham, who protected him from the wrath of the enemies, and protected him from any punishment which might have come to him for being involved in this war. Okay, either way, the second half of the promise is Scharcha Harbeimo. That's what we're going to be focusing on now. A great reward is promised by Hashem to Avraham. Now, any of us if we were promised such a fact. Whether or not we were afraid we didn't have reward or we did have reward, there was a promise that Hashem makes, Scharcha Harbeimo, you're going to have a great reward. Avram has a very interesting reaction to this promise. Most of us would react with either relief, ecstatic, this is a very exciting thing. We just had a communication with the Divine, we had a communication from the Holy One, blessed be He, and He said, Scharcha Harbeimo, left it sort of open, just abundant. You know how Avram responds to this? Avram says, Vayoymer, Avram Pasuk Bey, the second verse, Hashem Elokim, Ma Titein Li. What can you possibly give me? Va'anoichi Hoylech Ariri. I am going childless. What can you possibly give me? You think, Scharcha Harbe Ma'od? What do I have? I have nothing. Anochi Oilich Ariri Uben Mesek Basi Hudamesek Eliezer, the steward of my house, is this Damascene Eliezer. Oh, Mati Tainli, what can you give me? What can you give me? Not a reaction of thanks, not a reaction of relief, not a reaction of gratitude, a reaction of Mati Tainli. What are you possibly going to give me? And he continues in Pasukimo Vyomra Avram, Hein Lilo Nasata Zora, you have not given me children. Ben Basi Yoyresh Osi, and instead, my son, my servant Eliezer is going to inherit me. And therefore, Avram's response is one in such. He says, "That's really nice, but what can you give me? I don't have any children." A response that needs to be understood. So let's start with Rashi. What is the meaning of all this? So Rashi says. Rashi says, let's start with Rashi in the second line of the second column. First line of the second column, Hein lo nasato zera, you have not given me any children. Umato elas b'chol asher titen. What good is anything that you can give me? So the Rashi understood the complaint, so to speak, of Avram is, what good is it, what you can give me, when you haven't given me any children? And Rashi explains without reading inside this idea of Eliezer. Eliezer was the person who was Mamoina al-Shali. He was in charge of all that Avraham had. Physically, in the physical world, this world, everything that Avraham had, all of his possessions, the running of his house, everything was done through Eliezer. And spiritually, Rashi writes as well, Avraham didn't have a son, so Eliezer, the Gemara explains the language of domestic, the one who comes from domestic, to mean he was doyla umashket, another, to catch fish. He used to, so to speak, put in the bucket of water into the draught from the well and then pour it into others. Meaning, Eliezer was the one who plumbed the depths of Avraham's knowledge of Torah and of Hashem, and then he would be the one who would then pour it into the others. That he was in charge not only of Avram's physical fortune, but he was the person in charge of his spiritual fortune as well. And he was the primary disciple who would go out and give all the classes and teach Avram's Torah on behalf of Avram. Avram also obviously taught very much himself, but his principal student was this Eliezer. Therefore, Avram says, what are you going to give me? What benefit is it? I don't have anybody other than this Eliezer. He's not really mine. He's just my servant. Alright, a couple of obvious questions which we need to address. Number one, let's start with the question the Ramban asks. Now, I started in the middle of this parsha, chapter 15 to be exact. It's almost at the end of the parsha. It's in the middle of the fifth of seven aliyahs. Far earlier in the parsha, the very first couple phrases, if you will recall from the beginning of the parsha, so Hashem promises Avram a number of things. He says, Lech lecha me'aretzach, or go from your land, the place where you came. I'm going to make you into a great nation. I'm going to give you all sorts of blessings. And including in all of these blessings, we have a couple of psukim into the very beginning of the parasha. Vayera Hashem el Avram, Vayomer lizarecha eten es haaretz hazos. To your children, I will give this land. Now this is the very first aliyah. This is the very beginning, right when he's told to leave and to travel, and he's promised that to his children he will be given this land. So the Ramban asks the following question. Here you have a promise from Hashem to Avram. Your reward is going to be great. Avram responds, What good is it? You haven't given me any children. Aside from the fact that that's a bizarre response, which we'll get to in a minute, you were promised children already. Hashem said to you, in the very beginning of this parasha, leave the land of your father, of your birthplace, travel to Leonaya, I'm going to make that you into a great nation, and the land that I'm going to show you, I'm going to give it to your children. Now, if I heard that from the King of Kings, I think I'd be able to infer from there, I'm going to have children, and Hashem himself is promising me that I'm going to have these children to fulfill this promise that he's giving me of giving me this land. Says the Ramban, how come Avraham wasn't confident in that? That he has this response of, well, what are you going to give me? You haven't given me any children. So the Ramban introduces an idea here which we will find throughout Sefer Bereishis. It's an idea which comes up very, very often, and he will address as well in the coming psukim that we'll study this afternoon. The Ramban says the following idea: righteous individuals never trust in themselves to remain on the level that they are at. They simply don't have that trust. Meaning, it's a positive quality. If a promise was made to me, so that promise was on the condition that I am as I am now. You told me, Avram, leave the place of your inheritance, leave the place of your father's land and your birthplace and travel, and I'll make you into a great nation, I'll give you the land, and I'll give it to your children. Well, obviously you must be assuming that I'm going to remain as the Avram that I am now when you're telling me. I am always afraid and fearful. Shema yigrom hachet. That sin, inadvertent sin, will cause me to fall from my level, and I will be no longer worthy of your blessings, no longer worthy of your promise. And the righteous walk around with that sense of all those promises are great, and it's not that I don't trust in your ability to fulfill it, it's the trust is lacking in my ability to deserve it. And you may have promised it to me earlier, but says the Ramban, this is where he introduces it, and we'll see it very, very often in his writings and in other writings, this idea of Shema Yigrom Hachet, a fear lest sin, inadvertent sin even, cause me to fall from my stature that I am at now, to make me unworthy of those blessings. Now we're going to see this theme is going to be addressed in a few minutes as well, that when certain promises are made, or there are certain concepts, it's assuming I am where I am now, and that's subject to change. Sometimes it can change for the positive, sometimes it can change for the negative. Says the Ramban, even though he was promised children, that didn't mean anything to Avram. If it hadn't happened now, so then Avram says, well, if you would have given it to me, right, it's one thing, but it hasn't happened, there's no promise that it's going to happen in the future, because maybe I won't be deserving. That's how the Ramban addresses that question, why he didn't trust in the first promise that was made in the very beginning of the parasha. Okay, we have another question, a more obvious question, and that is, if you're promised reward from Hashem, what do you envision as your reward? What does that mean? Hashem promises you reward. You just close your eyes, and I could say, anyone sitting around this table, Hashem has promised you reward for whatever lifetime of work you have done. How do you envision that? So I don't think we would envision it in something this worldly. We all know that we're working constantly for the next world. We're working for something much greater than a little nicer house or a little fancier car or a little better, a little luxurious. We're not thinking about that. We're thinking long term. We're an eternal people, and we like to think in eternal terms. So if God is promising me great reward, I'm not necessarily expecting to see it tomorrow. It would be nice, don't get me wrong, we all would like to see that tomorrow, but I don't know that if I got a promise directly from God, that's what I would expect to see. And Avram, that's his first thing. Hashem says, Scharcha harve ma'od, you're going to get great reward, and he says, you can't give me anything, I don't have any children. So what happened to the next worldly type of, I can't give you anything, there's nothing I can give you without children? Where's Avraham's thought process at? So there are two interesting comments I want to share with you on this. The first is from the Ramban, and then we'll say one from the Maharal. The Ramban, right, how would you answer that question? I bet you're thinking the same thing the Ramban's thinking. What's the Ramban thinking? What do you think? Someone has a suggestion, something. Well, you know, no? The Ramban says as follows. If you don't want to guess, I'll tell you. The Ramban says as follows. I'm going to read you his words, because his words are so much more eloquent than I can say it. Hine, says the Ramban, lo ola v'daito, it never entered into the thought process of Avraham, sheyiye haschar hagadol hazeh olam haba. Never entered his mind that when God promised him reward, that Hashem was referring to the next world. Didn't even enter his thought process. Ki ze ein tzorech lahavtacha. That doesn't need any reassurance. Because Hashem here is reassuring Avram. He has a fear, my reservoir of reward has been used up. It's depleted. I just spent it on this war with the four kings and the five kings. Says Hashem to Avram, don't worry. Your schar is going to be great. Says the Ramban, never entered his mind, you're not talking about the next world. I don't need assurance that my reward for the next world is going to be given to me. That there's nothing to talk about. Ki kol oved Elokim yimtzachayim lefanav. Every servant of God, everyone who serves the Creator will find life, meaning eternity, before Him. That there's nothing to talk about. I don't need your reassurance. I'm not afraid of that. That's obvious. I serve you. There's going to be eternal reward. My service is in the nature of eternity. That's what we do when we give up our this world to do anything for Hashem. By definition, we're doing something that we would have otherwise rather been doing something else with our life and our time here. And we're doing something for our Creator. That's eternal. So that wasn't an issue for Avram. Ach ba'olam hazeh. But in this world, Yesh tzadikim shemagia alem kemaisa harishoyim. There are righteous people who their lot in life appears as if they received the wrong portion. They received the portion reserved for the wicked. That in this world you have things like that. There are no promises that in this world things will be good. No guarantees, no matter how righteous you are, how sweet, how kind, and how giving, that your lot in this world will be pleasant. That there'll be enough money in the bank account. That there'll be pleasant health. That there'll be gold, no promises. Okay, tzrichin bitachon. On that, you need an assurance. On that, if Hashem promises you, great. And if He doesn't, well, that's your lot in life, then deal with that. So says the Ramban, when Hashem promises Avram, your reward will be great. In the next world, he's not talking about that. I don't need your promises about the next world. I know what I'm getting in the next world. But if you're promising me that my reward is going to be great, what must you be talking about? That you felt the need to promise me that? You must be talking about this world, because I don't need your assurances otherwise. And on that, Avram says, this world? You're going to give me something in this world? What do you have to give me in this world? I don't have any children. So that Avram's response was only focused on this world, because he knew that the conversation had nothing to do with the next world, because that's obvious and already completed because of the fact that that's the next world. There's no issues over there. That's how the Ramban addresses that issue as to why Avram's response is focused on his children and not on the next world, because that's nothing to talk about. Maral has a little different angle on this, a fascinating angle. Maral says he was concerned about both worlds. He was concerned about both worlds. And he said, he says to Hashem, what are you going to give me? You can't give me anything, not in this world and not in the next world. He says, in this world, he says, I don't have everything that I have is going down to my servant Eliezer. So whatever you think you're going to be giving me in this world, it's not mine. It's going to be mine for a couple of years, and it's going to go right away down to my servant Eliezer. I don't have any of my own children to leave it to. So whatever you give me, it's not going to be mine anyway. So I don't want any of that. And if you're talking about the next world, says Maral, here's where they have different opinions. Again, the Ramban said the next world's not a discussion because it's done, spoken for and taken care of. Says the Maral, listen to this idea. Says, even in the next world, who is my principal disciple right now? Eliezer. He's the one, even in the spiritual realm, who is taking of my Torah and teaching it on to the next generation. But if I were to have a son, says Maral, Zeschar Godol Ma'od Olam Habo, that would be my great reward for the next world. For the sages have said, says the Maharal, Kol HaMeniach Ben Talmud Chacham, somebody who leaves a son who is a Talmud Chacham, who is a scholar, Ki'ilu Lo Mes, is as if he has never died. So says the Maharal, Avram's complaint is on twofold. Number one, you can't give me anything in this world, because everything I got is going down to Eliezer. And even in the next world, I'm limited because I don't have a son to continue on. And if I were to have a son who would be a righteous Talmud Chacham, scholar, it's ke'ilu, it's as if I never died. Why is that? So the Maral explains, because The ultimate chayim, life, is eternity, being connected with the Elohim chayim, the eternal God. And how do we connect with the eternal God? That's only through His Torah. The more that we're connected with the Torah, the more that we're connected to eternity. Not connected to the Torah, we have lives, but it fizzles out. So the example that I've heard to use over the years is a battery. You know, two types of ways of charging something. You can have buy a battery in a pack, a Duracell battery, and you put it in, and whatever you put it in is going to function, it's going to light, it's going to do whatever you need it to do, but there's a shelf life that it gets. Only got 20 hours of life, and then the battery's dead, and that's it. So even though right now it's moving along, but it's limited. When you got something plugged in, again, the example, of course, is not perfect, because nothing can exactly compare to Hashem. When you got it plugged in, there's a constant connection to the source of energy. As long as the source of energy remains, whatever I need, my light bulb, let's say I have a light bulb that, or my radio, it's plugged into the source. I am eternal because I'm connected to an eternal source. Even though they both, radios, one, let's take a flashlight, one is a battery powered and one is not, they're both shining the same light, but one is just the clock is ticking until it's done. And the other one is, it's just always there. So say the commentator, which the Maharal is referring to over here, you want eternity, you want chayim, how do you have chayim? So we all are physically alive right now. So some people in the world are alive, but they're like the Duracell battery which is in there, and as much as the commercials might want us to believe that they keep going and going and going and going, they really don't. Batteries eventually die, and it's just a matter of until the clock winds down and then it's kaput. Someone who's connected to the Torah and to Hashem also has that life that we're living, but we're eternal. And the physical body might go, but the connection is always there, and therefore the eternity is always there. And the sages say, someone who leaves a righteous son, a son who's a Talmud Chacham, he never died. Physically, the body might decompose, but the person has never died, because he's still connected through his son, which he helped create, to that sense of eternity. Says Avram to Hashem, I'm stuck on both accounts. In this world, you can't give me anything because it's all going to my son. And the next world, I don't have any connection. When I die, I can't still be connected in this world to the eternity that is you through leaving a child. And that's Avram's complaint to Hashem. I don't have a child. I don't have a son. Okay, continuing on. What's Hashem's response to Avram? What is his response to this complaint? Says Hashem in Pasuk Dalad. Vayomer Avram. Sorry, Vihine Dvar Hashem Elov Lemor. So the word of Hashem came to Avram saying, Lo Yirosh Chazeh, Ki Masher Yetzei Mimeyecha Hu Yirosh Shechon. Don't worry, this one, Eliezer, is not going to inherit you, but only one who actually comes from you. A child of yours will inherit you. Pasuk verse 5. Vayotze oso hachutza. Hashem then took Avraham outside. Vayoyimer and said to him, Habet noach shomayimo. Look out to the heavens. Usvor hakoi chavim im tuchal esporosam. See, count the stars if you're able to. See there, you can't count those stars. Vayomer lo ko iye zarecha. That is how your children will be. So he takes them outside, shows them the stars, and says, your children will be as numerous as the stars in the heavens, unable to be counted because of their great numbers. This is the promise that the Jewish people, we have always lived off of, this promise that Hashem gives to Avram, Ko yeh zarecha, your children will be like the stars of the heavens, innumerable, as the sages say elsewhere, like each one given a special name. Hashem names all the stars, He names all the Jewish children, each one an individual, a world unto Himself, numerous like the stars in heaven. Now Rashi here has a couple of comments. Number one, Vayetze lo achutza, Hashem took Avram outside. Do you think Avram had ever seen the outside before? Think he had seen the stars within the heavens before? Most likely. So the sages are very bothered. Why did Hashem have to take Abraham outside? Let's say we would have been sitting inside this room and I would have given you a promise. You are going to have children like the stars of the heaven. Would you say, wow, what is that? I know what that means. I know what that means. That means, So Rashi says, the simple explanation is, he said, yeah, let's go outside because it's going to be more meaningful. I'm going to actually point and show you. Yeah, that's what you're going to have. That's the simple meaning. Then the sages have what to say. The sages weren't satisfied with the simple meaning. Why would it be necessary to take him outside? So the sages say, the meaning is, go outside your astrological calculations. Right now you are bound, astronomy of course, or astrology, the study of the stars and the constellations is, and today it's a quack, there's nothing real going on, but it's a remnant of what used to be a real field. Meaning to say, one can read the stars and understand what will take place. It's not a matter, it wasn't sorcery and it wasn't magic. The stars, part of the way that, I'm not going to speak about this because I really don't get it, but just for the sake of this Rashi, the way that Hashem created the world is that He's all the way above there, and then there are many, many channels and worlds to get from His influence or whatever directives all the way down to the bottom line. A simple example, a king might run a country really well, but in order for the letter that you put in the mailbox to get to the address you send it to, a whole lot of steps that go into setting up the government in a way that all the things are in place to get the king's directive that this is what I want to happen, actually, when he says, let's set up a mail system, so that's the king's desire, but by the time it actually happened, there were a lot of steps along the way. So, I don't know if that was an accurate example or not, of the idea that the stars are one of the forces with which the influence of Hashem is directed down to the world in which we live. So a person who knows how to read them can understand what's coming, what's about to happen in the future. Just like if a person knows how to read a computer program, I can tell you what the program will do 10 minutes from now, not because I'm some magical sorcerer who knows how to tell the future, but because I know the code. I get that if this is the program that was written, then I know if X, Y, or Z will happen, it will result in A, B, and C. And if E, F, or G happens, then that will result in 1, 2, and 3. I just know the program. So the stars is one of the means in which a person could be able to read the computer program in terms of spiritual outcomes, and you could tell certain things about the world and about a person based on the reading of the stars. We lost that, the wisdom, it's no longer there, but it once was. That's why people used to worship the stars. It wasn't just a silly thing that people did worshiping the stars. The stars were actually a powerful tool for knowing things. You have to know how to decode it, but the stars actually held a lot of powers in the sun, and that's why people actually worship them. But,
I heard that Abraham was the one who first wrote down, like, the zodiac, and the Greeks eventually took it from him, and we have modern day, we give credit to the Greeks for, all their Avodah Zarahs that they used to pray to, but I heard there's a sefer that Abraham wrote, or it's known to be credited to Abraham, which first describes, and that was interesting, Hashem told to look at the stars. I'm wondering if that's when he got the wisdom to...
And it could be. It seems from Rashi, when we read the Rashi, that actually happened before that. Rashi writes as follows. Same, it's the Nignus Shalchad. Go out from your astrological calculations. Shiraisa bimazolos she'encha osid laha'amid ben. You saw in the constellations that you're not destined to have a child. Avram ein lo ben. The person with the name Aleph Beis Resh Mem, Avram. We know that Avram's name was changed from Avram to Avraham. So says Hashem, the person named Avram will not have a child. Aval Avraham yesh lo ben. But a person with the name Avraham will have a son. Sarai lo sele. The person with the name Sarai will not have a child. Sarah will have a child. And therefore, says Hashem, concludes Rashi, Ani kore lechem shem acher v'yishtana hamazo. I will call you by another name. I will rename you Avraham and Sarah, and therefore you will have a child because the stars that you read were correct. You could see it in the stars that you were not destined to have a child. And that's in fact correct. The people named Avram and Sarai were not going to have a child. But Avraham and Sarah were destined to have a child, and the sages saw that in that phrase, Vayetze Hachutza, that he took him outside. What do you mean he took him outside? It's an irrelevant fact that he went outside. No, it means he took him outside of the world that he was living. So he brought him above the stars and said, you're no longer bound by these constellations because you're going to change that. You're going to redo our destiny. This is an idea which has also been brought down to us. Ain mazel l'Yisrael. We don't have mazel. We Jewish people have an ability to change our mazel at any given time. We're not limited or bound by some set of pattern that this is for sure going to happen to us. We are people who have an ability. The Gemara Rosh Hashanah says the four things that a person can do to change their mazel. One of them is this, is changing a person's name. Because the name defines the essence of a person. The Gemara talks about that many, many times, that the name of a person is a defining characteristic. It says who a person is. That's why people have a very great hakpada. They have they're particular about being called by their Hebrew name, because it's not just a name. This is who I am. This is the name that I was given. There's a certain amount of divine inspiration that the sages say a parent is endowed with in naming a child. And this is how they're going to refer to me in heaven. When I get up to Shemaim, they're not going to call me by any. They're going to say, Plony, Ben Plony, Plas, Plony, Spas, Bliss, who are you? And so a name is a defining characteristic which establishes our mission, our goal, our essence is all defined in a name. And a person who changes his name is redefining his mazel. He's redefining who he is. And that's why we rename persons when they are either sick or going through other certain things, because it has an impact. It has an impact. And it's the same idea, by the way, when we speak about davening ourselves. We daven for things. So we say, how can you daven? If this is what Hashem wants it to be, how can you daven just to change it? And what we're doing is we're changing who we are. The same exact way that the changing of a name says, well, whatever the mazalo, so to speak, whatever was in line to happen to me, whatever was decreed upon me was going to happen, when I daven, I'm not that person anymore. Just like what we had started off the day with. Why did Avram not trust the initial promise of Hashem that he was going to have children? Because he was afraid maybe inadvertent sin will creep into my life and I'm not even aware of it, but I've fallen from the place in which you promised me. So the same thing is true in the other way. When evil decrees are against us and bad things are happening, when a person davens honestly or does more things, they take upon themselves, I'm going to do a new mitzvah. Why do those things work? Why do we think that that's only going to change the tide of whatever it is that's happening to us? It's because what we believe is that by my davening, by my putting forth heartfelt prayer, reconnecting in a new way, taking on new mitzvahs, I am recreating myself. I'm becoming something different. And therefore, whatever the decree was upon, that's not me. That's not me anymore. I don't do that. I'm a different person. If you remember last week, we said over at the very first pasuk in Parshas Noach that Ela told us, Noach, these are the generations of Noach, Noach ish tzaddik. Noach was a righteous person. And the sages said, the principal children of the righteous are their good deeds, not their real children. The main progeny that we leave in this world are our own meisim. And we explained, because when we do things, we are creating ourselves. We are giving birth to ourselves. We have a physical birth that we go through when our mothers gave birth to us. And then we have a spiritual birth in which we flourish and flower from all of our potential into who we really are. And as we do that, and as we flower, and as we grow, and as we change, we constantly recreate ourselves. We're giving birth to ourselves constantly in the spiritual world. And therefore, in doing so, we change those decrees which were upon us. We said, it's not me anymore. That was a mission for, that was a decree, that was the life that was going to be for that person. And now I'm like this. And therefore, so Hashem, so to speak, has to, oh, well, this is a different story. I only made those decisions based on that person. And now that person has become something else. So in any case, so Hashem says to Avram, go outside. Go outside the stars. You need to become something. You're going to become something new. I'm going to change your name to Avraham and Sarah. And you will be destined to have a child. And that child will inherit you and continue along. Last pasuk for today. What is Avram's response? Again, follow through what we have here. So Avram has a fear that he has depleted his reward, and Hashem reassures him, do not worry. Not only will I protect you either from the vengeance of the kings, according to Nachmanides, but I will also protect you that you shouldn't be punished because of the murder that you've committed, and don't worry, your reward will be great. Avram says, reward? What kind of reward are you going to give me? I don't have any children. So both in the physical world, as Ramban learns, anything you give me isn't really going to be mine. Or even as the morale adds, and even in the next world, I don't have that child to continue on my teachings to give me eternity. So Hashem says, no, I'll give you a child. I'm going to change your mazel. You're right that you have no child right now, and you're right that you're not destined to have a child, and therefore you're complaining, well, what can I give you? I'm going to change your mazel. I'm going to give you a new name. I'm going to give Sarah a new name, and through that you will, in fact, have a child. And the last pasuk Vav, sixth pasuk says, Ve'he'emin ba'Hashem, v'yachsheveh halo tzedakah. difficult pasuk to translate. Literally, he trusted in Hashem, vayachsheveha lo tzedakah, and he considered it righteousness. Now, there's a dispute here between Rashi and the Ramban how to translate this. The Art Scroll takes sides on that. In other words, let's just set up the problem. The first phrase is v'he'emin b'Hashem. So who is the subject of that sentence? Who believed in Hashem?
Avram.
Right? That's pretty obvious. V'he'emin b'Hashem. Avram believed in Hashem. And then, v'yachsheveha lo tzedakah. And he considered it to him righteousness. So who considered it to who righteousness? V'yachsheveha lo tzedakah. Which one is the capital H? He considered it to him righteousness. So the first half of the phrase was, Avraham believed in Hashem, and then Avraham thought it was righteousness of Hashem, or that Hashem considered it to be righteous of Avraham. So Rashi says as follows. Rashi says, what does it mean that Avram believed in Hashem? Now, again, when we say the words belief in Hashem, that makes a lot of sense. That doesn't bother us, that phrase, because everything that we do is a discussion of belief. Because we don't see Hashem clearly. So when we talk about Hashem, it's on some level, sometimes not just some, but a great level, a concept of belief. This is what we believe, this is what we've experienced. But to see clearly, we're not there yet. If we were a prophet, and we had a communication with Hashem. We actually dialogued. And then you told me after a certain dialogue, V'he'emin b'Hashem, and he believed in Hashem. Well, that's an odd thing. You just had a conversation with God. You don't believe in Him? You need more than that? What do you mean you believed in Hashem? So Rashi says, what does it mean that Abraham believed in Hashem following this promise of children? Says Rashi, V'he'emin b'Hashem, lo sha'ol lo os alzeh. He did not ask for a sign that this promise would be fulfilled. He didn't ask for anything to say, oh, you just promised me children? Show me something. Give me something. Give me something that I could latch on to that I know that this will happen. Why is that such a big deal? Because in the very next couple of psukim, this prophecy continues and Hashem promises Avram something else. Now he just promised him children. He's about to promise him the land of Eretz Yisrael, which he's also done previously, but he's about to do it again. He's going to say, I'm going to give you the land. And on that second promise, which is coming up, Avram responds and he says, it's right here on the same page even, on verses 8 and 9, let's go back to number 7 just for a second. The very next two psukim from where we are right now, verse 7, Hashem said to him, I am Hashem who brought you out of Ur Kasdim to give you this land to inherit. So Hashem promises Avram an inheritance, and Avram responds, my Lord Hashem, whereby shall I know that I am to inherit it? Give me a sign. How do I know? How do I know that I will inherit it? They have a whole then bris ben hamasan. They go through a whole sacrifice, a whole procedure in which Hashem basically gives that sign of the promise being fulfilled. So Rashi points out, but when he was promised children, on that he didn't ask for any type of sign. And on that, the pasuk says, "V'he'emin b'Hashem." We see a belief, we see a level of trust that we don't see when it comes to inheriting the land of Israel. There he asked for a sign, but he didn't ask for a sign by children. That's the phrase of "V'he'emin b'Hashem" that he believed. V'yachshevel lo tztaka, Rashi learns, HaKadosh Baruch Hu choshva la'avram l'zchus ul'tztaka al ha'emuna. Hashem then considered that righteousness of Avraham that he didn't ask. Who was being righteous here? Avram's righteousness. V'he'emin b'Hashem. Avram believed in Hashem, and Hashem then considered that a righteousness of Avraham and a merit for him that he didn't ask for any sign that he would in fact be blessed with children. That's how Art Scroll translated, putting the capital H, and he, meaning Hashem, reckoned it to him, Avraham, as a righteousness that he didn't ask for a sign on the children. Now, why should Avraham make a distinction between the promise of children and the promise of the land? Why was it that when he was promised the land, he responds, Bama Eda, how do I know? Give me a sign, tell me something. And yet when it comes to the promise of children, Avraham just went along with it without saying anything. So there are two responses to this that I've seen. One is again from the Ramban and one from the Maharal. The Ramban responds and says the difference in Avram's response was such that when it comes to the inheritance of the land, that's dependent on someone else, meaning the current inhabitants of the land. And again, he introduces the same concept which he said many times. Maybe they will all do tshuva. Maybe they will all right their ways and wish to dwell in the land of Israel, being part of God's plan. Remember now, we're still before Jews and non-Jews. This is Avraham Avinu. We're still talking right back in the very first person who's distinguishing himself as a believer. So you promise me that you're going to kick them all out and give me the land? Well, there's another part of the equation over here, and that is that all the people who are currently there are going to be deserving of being expelled from the land, that you can give it to me. And therefore, on that, Avram says, how do I know that that's going to happen? You're promising me the land, but even if I continue to be righteous, maybe they don't deserve to be thrown out, and therefore I ask for a sign that I should be given this. When it comes to the children, you just promise it. You promised me before. I say to you again, but I don't have anything yet. Maybe my chait will ruin it for me. That you re-promise it to me now. You're saying, no matter what, even if you sin, I'm going to give it to you. But it's only based on me, and you're telling me, no matter what, you're giving me the children. Because this is the second promise that you're making. After I told you I'm afraid that I'm not going to merit it, and you told me, don't worry, I'm going to change your mouth, I'm going to give you children. I don't need anything further than that. You just told me, even if I do something wrong. But when you promise giving me the land, that's based on someone else who's not part of this equation. Maybe they will merit to stay in the land, and therefore on that, Avram asks for a sign. That's how the Ramban explains why Avram did ask for a sign when it came to inheriting the land, and did not ask for a sign when it came to inheriting children. Noral has a little different approach again. Noral says, giving the land as a gift is something which is an action which will take place in the future. It's not happening now. Hashem is not saying to Avram, I'm going to give this to you now. There's a lot to go through. In fact, part of the promise was it's going to be 430 years of trials and tribulations going down to the land of Egypt and all the slavery that will take place there. It's not going to be so simple. And then years later, we'll eventually take over the land of Israel. So says the Maral, explaining Avram's position, you're promising me to do something later to give me a gift? I'd like some type of reassurance on that it's still going to happen, because it's way off in the future. But promising me children, all that you needed to do was change my mazel, which is happening right now. You just changed my name from Avram to Avraham. I don't need a future promise that will happen, because naturally I'll be able to have children as soon as this is done, and you're doing that right now. So once you promise me that I'll be able to have children, that's not an event which is going to take place in the future, that's an out of the ordinary type of event. It's just a matter of changing my constellations now, and if you do that, so then that will happen. I don't need to wait for some type of gift which will happen in the future. I don't need a promise on that. That I'm pretty sure once we do this right now, then that will take place. Alright, that's just parenthetical. What I wanted last thing to speak about in this pasuk is the Ramban argues on Rashi. So again, the way that Rashi read this pasuk was that Avram believed in Hashem that he would have children. He did not ask for a sign, because either according to the Ramban, he was confident that since it was based solely on him, he didn't have to worry about anybody else being involved. You promise it to me no matter what I do. And he didn't ask for any signs. And Hashem considered that righteousness of Avram that he didn't ask for a sign. That's how Rashi reads the verse. Ramban says that's impossible. It is impossible to say of Avraham Avinu, who's had all these communications with Hashem, that Hashem promises him something, and that he believed the promise, and then Hashem considered that a righteousness of Avram that he believed it. If that's a righteousness of Avram that you believed it, like, how could he not believe it? After all that he'd been through at this point, now he's gotten an assurance from Hashem that no matter what he does, of course Avram's going to believe that. You need a verse to tell you that Hashem considered it a righteousness of Avraham that he believed him. Can't be the meaning of the verse. And instead he says the meaning of the verse is reverse. Capital H is, and Avraham considered it a righteousness of Hashem to give him this promise of the children, and never considered it as a result of his own worthiness. That Hashem has given me this promise of children, it's his righteousness that he's going to do that, not because that it is my deserving it. So that the verse reads, Ve'he'emin ba'Hashem, Avraham believed in Hashem, and Avraham considered it righteousness of Hashem to give him this promise, not as a result of Abraham's own worthiness. And that is the classic response of the righteousness, that of the righteous, that they attribute the blessings bestowed upon them to God's goodness and not to their own worthiness and deserving of it. So that's how the Ramban reads this verse, as the fulfillment of this promise is Vayachsheveh Lotzdaka. So the Ramban would switch the capital H in the art school. The Ramban would read it as verse 6. And he trusted in Hashem, meaning he lowercase he, and Avram trusted in Hashem, and he lowercase h, and he, Avraham, reckoned it to him, capital H, as a righteousness, and Avram reckoned it to Hashem as being righteousness in giving him this, not because of Avram's deserving, as opposed to Rashi, who reads it the way that Rashi has it, that Hashem trusted in Hashem, and Hashem considered that righteousness of Avraham for not asking a sign, but believing in him that he would do it, regardless of Avram's future actions, he was going to be promised to have these children.
But what does the righteousness of Hashem mean? What the righteousness of a person is understandable. What is that?
I mean, I
had wondered the same thing, then I noticed that the word is tzedakah. I know what tzedakah is. I'm just not used to the word righteousness.
So
it makes more sense when I consider it a Hebrew word.
Means righteous giving. Yeah. It doesn't mean charity.
Yeah, the Ramban reads it mean as more just and I would say true and correct, in that it will not change. It will not ever be varied from. It won't be it was a like tzedek with righteousness, not like in terms of good behavior, but it'll be considered that it will for sure happen, meaning that you have promised it to me, and Avram considered of Hashem as a tzedakah, tzedek, nachon. He writes the word like this, he says, ki nachon hadavar, it will correct or that it will happen, emes lo yashuv mimen, it will be true, he will never return back from it, he will keep that word, ki tzidkas Hashem hi ve'ein lahesek, it is literally righteous and it has no break, meaning it will for sure take place. And he considered that as the righteousness of Hashem, that is there.
So the righteousness of having a child is okay, but the righteousness of getting the land was so he questioned the land, but he don't question.
And that's right. And that's the discussion as to what the difference is, and that's where we had a couple of possibilities. The Ramban himself felt that the difference was because of the fact that the land has someone else, another variable. But the sages point out that we were punished, as a Jewish people, were punished with the servitude in Egypt, partially because of Abraham's question of, well, how will I know that we will inherit the land?
Mm-hmm.
The sages say that. In other words, on the verse of children, it says, Behemin Bahashem. That he believed in Hashem. It doesn't say that by the promise of the land. And the sages say that lack of belief on that, that required him to say, I need this covenant seal to believe it, that it resulted, I think there are several factors resulting in our Egyptian bondage, but one of them the sages do point out was that question of, well, how do I know that I'll inherit the land?
Are we still paying for
that? That one, I do not believe so. That one, the way that I understand that was the servitude in Mitzrayim with the subsequent miracles and the events which took place out were fixing the lack of belief that Abraham had in the initial promise by building up the belief and the trust on the way out to then be back in the place where we can get that land. So you could say that if we would believe more, we'd get it back. But that initial problem was remedied by the Egyptian experience. So I don't know that we're still. I don't know that the sages say, like, for the sin of the golden calf, the sages say we're still suffering from.
I thought the Muslims believed in Abraham.
They do.
So why don't they believe this?
Oh, well, they can't believe in this book, because this book would clearly show that Yishmael was pushed aside.
Yeah.
So they rewrote the book.
But it also clearly says God gave the Jews Israel.
Yeah, I'm saying, they rewrote this book. They don't have this book. Other than that, in the Quran, there is no reference whatsoever to Israel, Jerusalem. It's not part of the initial religion. it was a much later invention from the Muslims, but it wasn't part of their initial religion.
Just on the progression of these verses, it's like verse number one, there shouldn't have been anything after that. I mean, he just said, I'm your shield and your reward is going to be great. And then Avram, in two verses, asks questions. And then there's this word they translated here, suddenly. Like, there's two separate instances here. Suddenly, and he tells him all these things. Almost as if he's, I don't want to say exasperated, but, the first verse was supposed to be enough. There shouldn't have been anything after that. But there are two questions, and then suddenly he takes him outside of himself or whatever. There's a whole different slant there.
I think you're right. I assume that's what you're alluding to in verses 2 and 3. It says, and Abraham said, then Abram said.
Yeah.
So if it was really one long statement, it just should have read as one long statement. And Abram said, what can you give me, seeing that I go childless? See, you've given me no odds. But there are apparently two separate statements there. And then you have the son. So I know that there's discussion of that. I don't remember at all what it is. I'm not going to talk about it at all. But there is what to say about here. Like this is an odd. It doesn't seem like it's a flow of a conversation. I'm agreeing with your point, but I don't have a response to it. All right. Have a great Shabbos, everyone.
Thank you.